Saturday, March 24th, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. While the nation is frothing at the mouth about guns and conveniently forgetting all the other factors that played a much larger role in allowing the tragedy in Florida, such as the numerous opportunities for the FBI to, do its job, actions are being taken in the people's name, and we are too emotionally charged up to even care. How can we not see how orchestrated this is? The people are currently being played like a fine instrument, and the scariest part is many actually think they came to these coordinated party line opinions all on their own, as if all of society just so happens to fall into one of two categories. The world is not that simple. This is being created. And anyone with an honest, contradicting opinion is now being openly censored by the major platforms. And that has to tell us something. Regardless of one's stance, owning a gun is still a well-established right in the founding document of this country. And as the people are almost effortlessly pitted against each other, this country continues to take steps that are both counter to what Trump promised and counter to what the people actually want. But those who speak loudest always appear to represent the largest opinion, but that is simply not the case. And far too many are being cowed by fear and peer pressure. And a perfect example of that is our first article today coming out of ZeroHedge.com. Citigroup enforces gun control restrictions on customers. The new policy announced Thursday prohibits the sale of firearms to customers who have not passed a background check or who are younger than 21. It also bars the sale of bump stocks and high-capacity magazines. It would apply to clients who offer credit cards backed by Citigroup or borrow money, use banking services, or raise capital through the company. The author of the article compares it to an article written by the New York Times in which they essentially advocate for exactly what Citigroup ended up doing. The article reads, "What if the finance industry, credit card companies like Visa, MasterCard, and American Express, credit card processors like First Data, and banks like JP Morgan Chase and Wells Fargo were to effectively set new rules for the sales of guns in America? Collectively, they have more leverage over the gun industry than any lawmaker, and it wouldn't be hard for them to take a stand. PayPal, Square, Stripe, and Apple Pay announced years ago that they would not allow their services to be used for the sale of firearms. If Visa and MasterCard are unwilling to act on this issue, the credit card processors and banks that issue credit cards could try." The article's titled, "How Banks Could Control Gun Sales If Washington Won't." And this is an incredible step for them to be taking. It reveals quite a lot about their political stance. I mean, really, this need to force one's beliefs and moral standards on others in any way possible, you know, laws and rights be damned, out of some wildly misplaced and false moral righteousness that in truth is being stoked from behind the scenes by those who could care less about the moral justification for the act, is soaring to new and dangerous heights. In many ways, all of this seems like a way to trick people into dissolving the Constitution themselves out of some orchestrated illusion that it's the right thing to do. Bottom line is that private companies have the right to do whatever they want to do with their own business. And we have a right to make a point to not use a financial service that chooses to force its political beliefs on its customers. It would be like trying to buy a car and the company not selling you the car because of who you voted for. And honestly, that doesn't feel that far off today. This country has no sense of itself anymore, and it's lost its true essence and now can no longer differentiate between emotions, irrational or otherwise, and critical thinking or rational thought, or between feelings about a subject and the facts at hand. And this is completely orchestrated, but the people are too worked up to realize just how easily they are being played today. Hopefully, Citigroup sees a huge plummet in their stock price, not because of my political beliefs or because I disagree with its stance, but because they are a financial group and have no place telling its patrons how to think. That's what I disagree with. A good example is Dick's Sporting Goods that chose to stop selling certain guns and their stock immediately dropped. It just shows you that people don't like being told what to do or what to buy or what they can do with their own body. We've seen that all throughout history. And this kind of thing, this new moral virtue signaling where they rise up to try to force their beliefs on what people are doing in a place like a financial group, it's absolutely unnecessary and should not be happening. feel free to announce your political beliefs, but the moment they force them on people, is something. It's getting into some very dangerous territory. Moving on to the next related story as well, coming from thedailysheeple.com. New Jersey kids suspended from school for going to gun range with family on the weekend. Yeah, this entire thing is getting wildly out of hand. The school's policy actually stated that students could be suspended for up to a year if they are, quote, reported to be in possession of a weapon of any type for any reason or purpose on or off school grounds. That's literally what it said. They're like trying to impose their own beliefs off school grounds on these children and their families. It's crazy. Since the suspension, NJ.com reported that Lacey School District quietly changed the policy, scraping the off school grounds prohibition and eliminating suspension length specificity. Then, quote, students are forbidden to carry any type of weapon or simulated weapon to school, which is what the revamped policy says. I mean, this entire case is absolutely overreaching. This is a good kind of a microcosm of what's going on in regard to the federal government. What essentially the main story here is this child went to a gun range with his family on the weekend, took a Snapchat picture of the guns and ammo they were bringing to the gun range, and very clearly said going to shoot at the gun range with the family for the weekend or something like that. Nothing, you know, ominous at all. And yet the school, simply because it was on his Snapchat on the weekend with his family, chose to force this on him. And as far as I understand, the suspension still stands. They've changed the policy. So right there, that should mean he's not in trouble anymore. But clearly what we're seeing, and the larger reason this story is involved, is that we are now seeing people force their political and personal beliefs in places that we should never be happening in the first place. Schools is a very important one, but this, you know, the Citigroup is another perfect example of someone forcing it in a place that it should never apply. And this is a very, very scary step to be taking, because it's generally being supported by a very radicalized group of the populace, being represented much larger than they really are. And I think that's important to understand that false majority that's being presented to us. But another related story, moving on to another one coming from thefreethoughtproject.com. As YouTube ignores child exploitation, they announce ban on millions of gun videos. YouTube has announced that it is banning videos that show users how to manufacture or modify firearms, adding to its ban on videos that link to firearm sales. And as users find that their videos have been removed or their channels are being suspended, some are moving to Pornhub and other alternative platforms to promote their content, a place where they might get a modicum of free speech today. This is taking place all while YouTube has ignored ISIS recruiting videos, and conversely has chosen to label videos that show the U.S. committing war crimes, conducting airstrikes that kill innocent civilians, and aiding the enemy it claims to be fighting as, quote, extremist content, and banning it from the site. At the same time, YouTube hosts thousands of videos with millions of views that are disguised as child-friendly content, while they actually promote violent sex and pedophilia. Its moderators also revealed in November 2017 that, quote, YouTube's system for reporting sexualized comments left on children's videos has not been functioning correctly for more than a year. Yet another example of a private company forcing its political beliefs on its customers, yet one arguably a monopoly, which does then mean it has a certain obligation to uphold constitutional rights, which then this then violates. But the fact that it takes this action, yet allows such horrendous content like pedophilic channels or simple ISIS recruiting videos, it reveals a larger agenda at play here, one that gets into a whole other conversation. I mean, all the stories we just discussed are all generally aligned in the same discussion here, that they're being forced upon people in situations that we've never seen before. Politics, and especially these wedge issues that are being pushed and used against people, are being promoted now in places we've never seen before. And that's very alarming to me. I mean, and really the larger point that I'm getting to today with the show is that while the country falls into yet another socially engineered trap, the U.S. continues to pull farther and farther away from what it once claimed to be. And the people are too distracted to even notice, and others too conditioned to see that broken promises for what they truly are today. And getting into the first story in that regard, coming from theantimedia.com, U.S. announces another $1 billion in new arms sales to Saudi Arabia. The sales are going to include 6,600 TOW TB missiles at a cost of about $670 million, with the rest of the contract coming in the form of various parts for U.S.-made vehicles previously sold to the Saudi military. The State Department justifies the sales as an attempt to help the Saudis build up their military to, quote, maintain stability. I mean, this is one of the stories just getting completely ignored with all of the talk going on about guns and the wedge issues being placed on the people. But the point here is that we constantly are pointing out the negative aspects of other countries, rather the U.S. is. A good example is something like Venezuela that's constantly getting focused today. Yet we have a country like Saudi Arabia that has far worse in just about every possible regard, specifically with human rights, which always tends to be the focal point with other places like Venezuela. Yet we're openly selling arms to them like it's no big deal. And while they're currently committing open genocide in Yemen, something that even members of Congress have openly spoken out about, the horrendous nature of what's going on there, yet we continue to fund and give them weapons to carry this out. I mean, this hypocrisy is just glaring today, and it's really beginning to stand out for a lot of people to see. But I think that's a large reason why we're seeing all of this political, you know, commotion happening today, to take the attention away from some of the larger things going on around the world at the behest of the U.S. government, or rather those, you know, controlling it today. And this one really stands out to me because it frustrates me, the wild hypocrisy taking place while we continue to fund such pretty much one of the worst human rights violators in the world. And that's openly regarded. That's openly acknowledged by most people today. So ask yourself, while we're continuing to fund their genocide in Yemen and many other things that they do in their country, that if any other country were to do, would be the largest story of the day and probably end up being invaded by U.S. government. So it's just very frustrating to see this continue, and especially with no attention from the media. Moving on to the next story coming out of mintpressnews.com, new U.S. defense agency's report on global nuclear powers omits allies. Interesting. A recent report created by the Defense Intelligence Agency at the behest of the Senate Armed Service Committee sought to provide an overview of, quote, foreign nuclear weapons-related capabilities. However, that report focuses on only three of the world's nine nuclear powers. Guess who they are? Russia, China, and North Korea, all of which happen to form part of the Trump administration's new axis of evil. The report also makes mention of Iran, Libya, and Syria, big surprise, also rogue states at odds with American foreign policy, even though none of these countries currently possess nuclear weapons. While the report's focus on enemy nations is unsurprising, what is surprising is the complete lack of attention given to any of the five other nuclear powers that were not mentioned in the report: Pakistan, India, Israel, and the United Kingdom, and France. The likely reason for their omission from the report is the fact that all of these countries are staunch U.S. allies, save for Pakistan, whose alliance with the U.S. has recently faltered. Absurdly, the report on global nuclear powers makes no mention of India and Pakistan, despite there being major tension and conflict between them both. And Pakistan, like the U.S., has consistently refused to reject a first strike using nuclear weapons policy. And each country possesses between 120 to 140 nuclear warheads. Why would this be left off a list of global nuclear powers? It's a good question. Yet I think we know the answer. Like all things today, it's used as a political tool and not as an honest way of addressing a potential world threat. One which people tend to forget in this conversation is Israel, as it has never officially admitted to having nuclear weapons, a policy known as nuclear ambiguity. Yet there are widely known to exist, with most estimates placing a total at around 80 nuclear warheads. In addition to being the region's only nuclear power, Israel is also the only country in the Middle East to not have signed the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, which is very revealing. And anyone else in the Middle East to have not done that, would there be obviously drastic consequences from the United States government. Now, because it's not signed the Non-Proliferation Nuclear Weapons Treaty and has not openly declared its stockpile or nuclear doctrine, Israel is free to basically continue amassing nuclear weapons and to launch a first strike against would-be adversaries. And I think ultimately this is the point. But I think we need to continue to ask ourselves why such a thing would be done, that they would create an open report claiming to be addressing all of the world's nuclear powers and yet only address the enemies. I mean, that's just very revealing. And it's something I think it's meant, this is a longer point here. This is something that is probably going to be addressed down the line as a way to manipulate what's really going on in the world, like all the things we see today. But the simple fact that this could even happen, they could sit down, consciously write a report claiming to be about all the nuclear powers, and just happen to leave off all of the U.S. allies and focus acutely on its enemies. I mean, what else is that? What else do we need to see that there's a clear effort taking place here? Very obvious. Moving on to the next story coming out of naturalblaze.com, it's official. U.S. is seeking death penalty in drug cases, but not for Big Pharma. When Donald Trump suggested imposing the death penalty in drug-related cases, many people thought he just was spouting off at the mouth like he has done quite often in the past. Unfortunately, his statements were not just typical Trump. They are now official Justice Department policy. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions instructed federal prosecutors on March 21st to begin seeking the death penalty in drug-related cases where it's, quote, appropriate, always typically ambiguous. Sessions and his Justice Department are claiming that the policy is being implemented to counter the opioid epidemic, something that I find just absurdly hypocritical. I mean, with all we know of what's actually fueling the opioid epidemic and the government connections and all the different things we know, the fact that this is being used to counter that is just, it's horrendous. And it's an affront to the people to know that they're now claiming to be committing people to death, essentially, for something that they created in the first place. I mean, how can this be where we have come to today? How can any American truly look at such a policy and feel that this represents a nation claiming to support freedom and liberty and free choice? These are the actions of an authoritarian regime, just like we saw in the Philippines. In my opinion, this is just another way to take the focus off the government connection to the opioid crisis and its correlated rise in opium production in Afghanistan, in occupied Afghanistan. As long as they can point to the death of those evil drug dealers and subtly point to Mexico as the culprit, maybe we'll forget to point out that this was all allowed, even fueled, by the negligence and greed of the very politicians who are allowing these horrendous policies in the first place. Moving on to the next story coming out of thefreethoughtproject.com. After increasing the national debt $1 trillion in just 6 months, U.S. government just gave themselves a massive raise. This week, the U.S. Congress passed the massive $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bill. None of the politicians in Washington likely had any time to read it because the 2,200-page legislation was given to them only hours before they voted on it, something we've noted many times in the past and only a few people have actually pointed out, a great picture by Rand Paul showing exactly the point that this is impossible for any of these politicians to actually know what's going on, given that they only had a few hours to read such a massive bill. The Senate passed the proposal by a bipartisan 65-32 vote. The House approved the bill Thursday afternoon by a 256-167 vote with bipartisan backing. Exactly why this massive spending bill would receive such a large bipartisan support by hundreds of politicians who never read it would be a mystery to those who don't understand how truly broken Washington is today. However, to those paying attention, the reason is obvious. It gives the state more money. Both Republicans and Democrats in the House and Senate increased their own budgets in the $1.3 trillion omnibus spending package. The Senate alone increased its total salaries of officers and employees by $12.6 million. It wasn't just the Senate. Every single government agency, except for the government publishing office, which remains the same, has increased their department's budget in this bill to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. When you allow people to vote themselves raises twice a year, what else would we expect? These are the same people who just increased the national debt by $1 trillion in only 6 months. This despite Trump's ongoing claims to be doing the exact opposite. Last week, the national debt exceeded $21 trillion for the first time ever, a little more than 6 months after it hit $20 trillion on September 8, 2017. According to Rand Paul, the U.S. government has become so disgustingly gluttonous that they spend $1.7 billion a year to maintain 770,000 empty buildings, all while purchasing more and more property. American college students dig themselves a never-ending pit of debt as they progress through higher education, and the U.S. is doling out tens of billions of dollars to pay for college in other countries as well as support their militaries. This does not really seem like America first to me, but that was a Trump notion that was dispelled long ago, as far as I'm concerned. Anyone who cannot see that this is not some long con meant to trick the deep state and is in fact the very opposite of what was promised is simply lying to themselves. In addition to the spending, there was a very deceptive and unconstitutional act secretly added to this spending bill, which has nothing to do with spending. We shouldn't be too surprised. The next article coming from activistpost.com, responsibility deflected. The Cloud Act passes. In the final pages of the bill, meant only to appropriate future government spending, lawmakers snuck in a separate piece of legislation that made no mention of funds, salaries, or budget cuts. Instead, this final tacked-on piece of legislation will erode privacy protections around the globe. This bill is the Cloud Act. It was never reviewed or marked up by any committee in either the House or the Senate. It never received a hearing. It was robbed of a standalone floor vote because congressional leadership decided, behind closed doors, to attach this unvetted, unrelated data bill to the $1.3 trillion government spending bill. Congress has a professional responsibility to listen to the American people's concerns, to represent their constituents, and to debate the merits and concerns of this proposal amongst themselves. And this week, they absolutely failed. And I would argue failed many, many times before that. The article reads, as we wrote before, the Cloud Act is a far-reaching, privacy-upending piece of legislation that will enable foreign police to collect and wiretap people's communications from U.S. companies without obtaining a warrant, allow foreign nations to demand personal data stored in the United States without prior review of a judge, allow the U.S. president to enter, quote, executive agreements that empower police in foreign nations that have weaker privacy laws than the United States to seize data in the United States while ignoring U.S. privacy laws, to allow foreign police to collect someone's data without notifying them about it, and finally, empower U.S. police to grab any data, regardless if it's a U.S. person's or not, no matter where it is stored. America first? I don't think there could be a policy farther from America first than what this entails. But maybe that's why it was secretly slipped in and why Americans are being turned on each other over something that's supposed to be an inalienable right. But facts no longer matter today, it would seem, as most are no longer even aware of what that term is supposed to mean. Well, let me remind you. An inalienable right is defined as a right according to natural law, a right that cannot be taken away, denied, or transferred. But truth and facts are quickly taking a backseat to the wholly created and directed emotional response of the mindless masses. This is what America is being turned into, a mob, unless we do something about it. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.